This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. You may not spend much time thinking about the properties of spider webs, except perhaps how difficult it can be to brush them off your face, barely containing your horror when you run into them in the woods. But spider silk is one of the toughest materials in existence, with combined strength and elasticity that our manufacturing techniques struggle to match. That probably doesn't help with the horror part. Anyway, scientists are trying to unlock some of the secrets of spider silk by sequencing the genetic code of the spiders themselves. One new study is led by the University of Vermont and the University of Pennsylvania. And one of the researchers on that study is Inge Arneson. He's an expert on spiders and the properties of spider silk at UVM, and he joins us now. Professor Arneson, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what is so great about spider silk?
Well, they are pretty unique when you compare them to man-made materials. We are pretty good at making materials that are either very strong or maybe very stretchy. But spider silk combine the two, and it's in the combination of these two properties that makes them really, really tough.
When you say really, really tough, I mean, maybe you can help explain this, because we hear often that spider silk is very tough and very stretchy, but it's not that hard, really, to break a spider web when you walk through the woods. It breaks pretty easily. So can you explain the properties of this toughness and maybe extrapolate it for us in our brains so that if the spider silk was actually, you know, the width of a steel pipe, how much stronger would it be?
Right. So the reason it's easy to walk through them is that they're extremely thin fibers. They are at sort of nanoscale thickness. So if you were to weave them into a rope that was the same thickness as a steel fiber, you would not walk through that. Simple to say. And it would be a little bit stronger than the steel, but much, much more stretchy, and therefore able to absorb much more energy. And that's really what toughness is. This is the combination of both the strength and stretchiness.
And are we able to make man-made materials that can mirror or match that toughness of spider silk?
No. In short, at least not easily. So the goal of this study is trying to understand at the molecular level the building blocks, how these materials are actually put together by the spiders to aid us in mimicking these properties in man-made materials.
And to do this study, I understand that you decided to sequence the gene of a particular spider, and it's called the golden orb weaver. So why did you decide on that spider?
So we sequenced the genome of golden orb weaver. The reason is mainly because this is the sort of the lab rat of spider silk research. Because they are easy to work with, they're very large spiders, so you get relatively thick fibers out of them. And they're easy to find in nature. They're pretty common in southern USA. So it's mainly that it's really easy to get them, easy to get silk out of them. And since we know already a lot about their biomechanics, it's very practical to do a study like this on their genomes.
Do they live in Vermont at all?
No, they don't reach as far north as here.
So what do they look like?
They live in my lab, which is in Vermont.
Yeah, that's different. What, you said they're very large. What do they actually look like?
Let's see. They are maybe up to a couple of inches long with the legs. Make these typical orb webs, but they have a unique yellow golden shine to them. So it's really easy to identify them in the field because their silk is yellow.
Hmm.
And they're sort of long, large spiders making big webs.
Why sequence the gene of the spider rather than focus specifically on the properties of the silk itself?
Well, a lot of the research that has been done on spider silk in the last 50 years has focused on the biomechanical properties, and we understand these pretty well. So now the issue is, what is the structure of these materials that have this excellent performance? And that's where this study comes in, trying to understand the molecular makeup of these fibers whose biomechanics we have already characterized pretty well.
And what have you found so far? I know we've buried the lead here. So what have you found in your study?
So this is kind of the first full genome of an orb-weaving spider. So our first goal was simply to characterize the different types of silk they have and asking very basic questions like how many types of silks do they actually make? How many types of proteins are each type of silk composed of? And what are the similarities and differences between different silks? So we've created this huge database, this resource that we can now basically pinpoint the molecular structure of different types of silk and start to answer these questions of, you know, what is it that makes this particular silk very strong or that other type of silk very stretchy and so on.
I love that because I don't usually think about the different kinds of spider silk, but they're very different depending on what the spider is actually intending the silk to be used for. So I'd love for you to describe some of the different silks and the different ways the spider thinks about using them.
Right. So a typical spider, orb-weaving spider like the golden orb-weaver, they have seven different types of spigots from which they extrude the silk. And each of them produces quite different fibers that are used in different contexts. So some of the silks they, for example, use as the bridge lines and radial fibers, kind of the structural fibers of the orb web. A different type of silk they use as the sticky spiral that orb webs typically have. They have a specific type of silk-like material, the glue that goes in there. They have a specific fiber to make the outer coating of an egg sac, for example, for protecting the spider eggs. And they have another type of silk, which they use specifically as a cement to glue fibers together while making, for example, webs, and so on and on.
It's so amazing. And I also love this idea that the venom sac has some interplay with making silk, and it makes me wonder if silk has any kind of venomous properties in it, or if it's just happens to be that the venom sac is making some of the silk.
Right. So this was very surprising. The silk fibers come out of the end of the abdomen of the spider where all the silk glands are, and the venom is produced in the front of the spider close to the mouth, obviously. So there's no physical connection or proximity, but it turns out that one of the silk proteins is almost exclusively expressed in the venom glands. So this was really surprising, and we really don't know what it's doing there.
That's amazing.
It may help keeping the venom together somehow or something like that. We really don't know. But the silk strands themselves don't have any venomous properties as far as we know. They can be good antibiotic properties or have those properties so that bacteria don't grow on silk threads, for example, but nothing like a venomous property.
So, Inge, do you have a next step, like a practical application that you hope this research will be used for, or is it just interesting to know about spider silk?
Well, for me, you know, I'm driven by curiosity more than anything else, but I think this is setting us up for practical applications. So the next project is to take the another species of spider that has this super strong, super tough silk, do the genome of that spider, and then compare the two and try to figure out what exactly is it that makes this new spider so different from other spiders.
Well, Inge Arnigsen, professor of biology at UVM, a leading expert on spiders and spider silk. I hope we can have you back. I bet there are lots of listeners who have questions about spiders, and I would love for you someday to defend the lowly spider from people who hate them. Thank you very much, Professor Arnigsen, for talking with us about your research.
Okay, thank you very much. Take care.